Hello, this is another episode of the podcast, Cine Club Wise. I'm Jake.
And I'm Billy. Today, we're taking a look at one of the defining filmmakers of the golden age of Hollywood, Billy Wilder. From his comedies, to his dramas, to his noir crime stories, we're tackling it all. I think my favourite of his is probably Some Like It Hot.
That could have gone a few different ways, because you've ranked all of them very, very highly. Yeah. So yeah. I was thinking, I don't know which one your favourite would be.
Well, but... it's like all really highly, and then 7 years, it just drops off a cliff.
Yeah, that's exactly the same for me, I think. I think Some Like It Hot's my favourite, probably followed by The Apartment, probably followed by... Double Indemnity, and then, yeah, 7 Year Itch is, like, right at the bottom.
Yeah, I'm the same, except you would sort of sandwich Sunset Boulevard between The Apartment and Double Indemnity.
I am going to have to watch that, because that one does look really good. I think it was, because I've watched most of these with my mom, because my mom absolutely loves Marilyn, you know, she's worshipped her, like, her whole life, and then that one doesn't have Marilyn, so I was like, well, here's all the ones you can watch. She's like, let's see the Marilyn ones. I was like, okay, so we'll get back to that one, but, I mean, yeah, Some Like It Hot is just, it's such a classic. It's so good.
I think it was the first proper film that I've seen Marilyn Monroe in.
Yeah.
So it was, I've seen All About Eve, but she's barely in that.
Yeah, because she turns up in a couple, but it's more like a sort of cameo where she is like a main character in that one, and she's really good in it.
She's really good. All the performances in Some Like It Hot are great. Like Jack Lemmon's amazing as usual.
I love him and everything I've seen him in so far. He's just so like, I don't know. He's a really good balance between like, he can be quite straight laced, but he's also just like sort of Looney Tunes over the top character actor at the same time. But I just love him. He's so cool.
That's quite a good sort of, he is very Looney Tunes. I didn't think of it that way before, but he is.
I think it's the slightly squeaky voice and like the sort of exaggerated reactions. And you could just imagine how, because he's very animated as well. He's got like a very animated face. And he always reminds me of that sort of, you know, that particular era of like 40s Looney Tunes characters. And I think the whole film is very Looney Tunes, to be honest, which is partly why I liked it so much.
You wouldn't be surprised to see like Bugs Bunny just kicking about this hotel on the beach.
100%. Well, it's the oh, let's like, you know, dress up as women, nobody recognizes us, and like it's such a like out there concept, but like you don't even really like question it. I think it lulls you in, and you like you just buy it all the way. And
it's so funny as well for like a comedy from the end of the 50s.
Totally is. It's 59, I think, and I was like, I was dying laughing at some of it. I was like, it genuinely has aged. It's aged so well as well, because I thought, like, I think one of the reasons I didn't watch it for so long, because what, like I say, it's one of my mom's favorites. I had a friend in school who loved it, and she always told me, oh, you should watch it. It's like, you know, because I watched old films, they were like, this is a classic, you got to watch this. But I think when you read the synopsis, and then you look at when it was made.
I know, it feels like it could be like low-hanging, punching down at trans people.
Exactly that. I thought this is going to be like so insensitive, and it's going to probably be funny, but like not funny in a way you want to be laughing at it. Like in a, like, you know, it's just offensive, but it's not. Yeah. It really isn't. And most of the time, it has... It's stupidly progressive for like 1959.
That's what took me back when I was watching it, because it's like, you know, you've got all these girls traveling together on the train, and they're just—it's just like quite like a good representation of women.
Yeah.
You know, you've got Osgood. that famous scene right at the end where nobody's perfect.
It's probably my favorite closing line of any film. Also, that whole bit where he's like gradually listing like everything. He's like, it's like, well, nobody's perfect. It's like,
I'm a man. Well, nobody's perfect.
It's so funny. I love it.
It's just such, like you say, it's such a great ending for the, like, one of them goes away with Marilyn Monroe, and the other one ends up with this bloke.
Ends up with this fella who's been obsessed with them the entire film. But it's even that, it's the fact that, like, Osgood's, like, sort of, he doesn't, like, you know, he doesn't harass the Jack Lemmon character, but he kind of does. And then even that, the dialogue that comes from that, where he's like, oh my god, like, is this what it's like all the time? This is awful. Like, I hate this. Like, stuff like that is like I say, it's kind of progressive for what it is. And but it's so cartoony that it never feels too in your face. I think you can read it that way, but you're never sitting thinking, oh yeah, like, this is like really hard hitting. Like, it's just, it's played for laughs, but not in like a malicious way. It's just, it's good, clean fun. You know, it is.
I feel like you never know where it's going to go with it either. Because, like, it starts off as, like, a gangster story where the witness people getting murdered. It's like, what the hell? I thought this was a comedy. And then they just completely forget about that for most of the film when they've gone to this
hotel.
And then suddenly there's, like, a gangster convention downstairs or something at this exact hotel.
That's what I mean. That's why it's so Looney Tunes, because it is just that kind of thing. It's like, where are we hiding? Oh, in the hotel where they're holding the gangster convention. The one thing that we didn't want to bump into. And it's like, and then doesn't the whole thing get resolved by, like, they don't even do anything. It's just another gangster kills the gangster that was trying to kill them.
Yeah, so, and like, then they just leg it to a boat.
That's what I mean. It's like, it's so, like, lighthearted for being quite dark at the same time. Like, that sounds, on paper, it sounds really dark. They've witnessed a massacre and they're on the run from these gangsters who want to kill them. But it's just, it doesn't feel like that at all. It's so funny. And it's like, even they're carrying the instruments around that, like, full of bullet holes, like, the whole film, like, nobody really questions it. And like you say, yeah, the whole, all the girls on the train, like, that, the sort of community they have is quite good. And then the way Marilyn's kind of like the slightly more rebellious one who always gets scolded, but then they all get on with her because she is, you know, the sort of rebellious one. And and I mean, you know, obviously there's the sort of love triangle that they try to get out of it, but I think they resolve that well, because Tony Curtis is, like, much more, like I say, straight-laced, upstanding, and Jack Lemmon is the more cartoony one, so you couldn't really imagine him.
Yeah, they don't get too hung up on it.
No, and they don't. I don't think they don't focus too much on that, and even the way they play that with the, when it starts getting into him doing the, like, the sailor character, like, that's the thing, like, that becomes a hilarious thing in itself, that he's, like, doing this, like, exaggerated accent. He's, like, got this whole backstory about he can, like, never love again, and it's so funny. And, like, and it, you know, it does, it almost feels like a sort of tender romance, but it's not, like, a really in your face, like, it's not trying too hard, I think, which is, this is what I mean, this is why it works. It balances everything. It has so much going on, but it never feels like one thing is dominating it. It's just like the whole thing balances out. But it's so funny. It's just like, that's the thing. That's the, like, even if it was like all of these things were true, it would still be good. But I think the reason it is amazing is because on top of all of that, it's just got a really, really funny script.
Yeah, it does.
Like, yeah.
I couldn't fault it. It's currently my number one this year from the films that I've seen.
I can't argue with that, because I watched it. It's one of those ones that always comes on at Christmas. And I remember it was like Christmas holidays, you know, weather was all cold and horrible. We were just sat in the house. My mom was like, oh, Something Like It Hot's on. And that was when I watched it for the first time. And I loved it. I didn't know what I was going to think of it, because I didn't really know. I'd never seen a Marilyn film. I don't think I'd never seen anything with Jack Lemmon or Tony Curtis. And I mean, yeah, I always forget Tony Curtis, Jamie Lee Curtis' dad as well, which is like,
is he?
Yeah, he is.
I didn't know that.
So Jamie Lee Curtis, Tony Curtis, and Janet Leigh.
I didn't know she was like a double
Nepo baby. Yeah,
I
exactly.
I thought it was just Janet Leigh.
I know, which makes it all the more crazy that John Carpenter got her in Halloween, because it's like, how the hell? She's like bound to be really famous at that point. But so I knew quite a lot of things about it, and I thought it was going to be a bit like the Hot Fuzz thing, where, like, I'd heard so much that I was going to be like, yeah, it was good, but, like, I expected everything. But I didn't. I still absolutely loved it. So, and I just want to, like, it's one of those things you could just go back to and watch over and over
again.
It's
such an easy watch.
It is, yeah, because it's not that long either. And yeah, I loved it. It's probably one of those perfect classics that you could hold in high esteem without much guilt. So
I think The Apartment sort of you can put that in the same boat.
I would put that in the same boat, although I think what's interesting about that one is that's nowhere near as well known. Like, it's still quite a well-known Hollywood classic, but it's not like, I feel like you mentioned Summer Like It Hot, everybody knows what you're talking about, but The Apartment's quite a lot more underrated, which is a shame, because I loved that as well.
Yeah, it's great.
That was another one where I had, like, you know, convinced my mom. I was like, I know Marilyn's not in it, okay, but Jack Lemmon's in it, so, you know, it'll be good. And she'd never seen it, and she really liked it as well. But I think it's good, because it's like, it's a similar one where it's still really funny, but it's like much, much darker.
Yeah,
like, it's a really dark film, but you almost don't notice it until you've finished it and had like a little bit of time to think about it. Cause like I was watching it and I was like, oh, I feel bad for this guy, but like, it's a comedy, right? It can't be that bad. And it was only after I'd watched it and sort of like had a day or two to digest it, I was thinking about it. I was like, God, that is like, the whole thing's really depressing. It's miserable. It's really bleak, but...
Well, it's like the main girl like tries to top herself, but it's like completely offset by Jack Lemmon's sort of charismatic demeanor.
Exactly, yeah, because he's there. I think because he's so nice that he almost like removes all of the like the potential horror in every situation. Yeah. It's like he walks into the room and like suddenly you sort of forget everything terrible that was going on, even though he's the one who's like suffering the most, arguably, but...
I think it's a testament to sort of the character writing and the way that Wilder sort of wrote him and like directed. Like C.C. Baxter is just like, I can't even explain it. He's just like one of the most sympathetic characters ever.
Yeah. From like the first, and I think it does a really good job of introducing it really quickly as well, because from pretty much the first scene, you're already like, God almighty, this poor guy, like, how has he done this, you know? And then and then when he's at work, it's like even worse, because all these people are just like harassing him constantly, and like they don't even see him as like a friend or anything. They just
a means to an end.
Exactly. Yeah. And you just feel so bad because he's like literally got nothing, basically. He doesn't even have an apartment at most of the film. He's like effectively homeless. No friends, no girlfriend, like nothing, you know?
It's just 2 hours of this poor fella getting punched down at.
Exactly. I know, that's the thing. And then even when he meets Shirley MacLaine and they have like the sort of romance starts becoming a thing, you've still got like the dickhead boss from Double Indemnity is like getting in the way of the whole thing, both on both fronts, because he's like taking his apartment and he's also like taking his girlfriend at the same time. So it's
when they revealed it, I didn't know what to feel about Fran after that point. It was like she became a lot more complex than what I initially thought she was going to be when she was introduced, which again, it feels like massively ahead of its time to write a character like that for a sort of 50s 60s.
Totally. Oh no, 100%. And I mean, like you say, it does, it's an old film, but it does, you know, it does cover suicide in quite a few scenes. I mean, but even then, this is what I mean. So it's like, it's awful. It's not a thing to laugh about, but they make it kind of lighthearted because it's like the bit at the end where she thinks that C.C. Baxter's killed himself, but he's just opened a thing of champagne. So she's like running to the apartment and she's like, oh my God, are you all right? What have you done? And he's like, oh, I'm celebrating. It's fine. It's like stuff like that. You sort of, because you've like watched the film and seeing all of the sort of like heartbreak and the tragedy that they all go through, by the time it gets to that point, you're kind of like,
you wouldn't even be surprised.
You wouldn't even be surprised. You're like desensitized to the whole, like the horror of it and the concept. And I think it's quite nice to have a film that presents that, where it's like not a really over the top traditional Hollywood, like sort of happy ending. Yeah. It's just like, but it's happy enough for the context of everything that's happened. I like that because I think that makes it feel more genuine, because it's like, oh, it's okay. Like, you know, he's got his sort of life back. He's not being bullied by the boss and he's sort of going out with the girl who he was, you know, chasing after the whole film. So,
yeah, I think that's something you can sort of say with a lot of Wilders. I feel like they do feel a lot more authentic, especially considering he was sort of one of these big tentpole golden age Hollywood filmmakers. They do have a like authenticity to them. And obviously, you haven't seen it, but Sunset Boulevard was sort of in the same boat, where it's like quite an authentic depiction of an aging movie star, which you wouldn't have really expected for the time.
No, not at all.
It's especially like a performance like that from a woman at the time. Yeah, it's like
totally.
I don't think you would really expect a female character to be portrayed like that.
Well, the fact that they got an actress, who's the lead actress in Sunset Boulevard again, is it?
It's Gloria Swanson.
Gloria Swanson. Like, I think to get an actress who almost, like, it's kind of like the Demi Moore substance thing, where it's like they've got an actress who's, like, some people maybe would have said, you know, obviously it's not fair to say it, but some people probably would have said, like, oh, you know, they're at their sort of, they're over the hill, they're at the point in their career where, like, they could, like, you know, sort of retire. But obviously they don't want to hear that. That's not... Oh, that's an awful thing to say, but like to get an actress who probably maybe, you know, would have had that said about them and then deliver this stunning performance, you know.
Yeah, no, I totally, it does feel very self-reflexive of like, of not just her, but like the genre as a whole, and probably what Wilder's scene during his time there.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, because they were, I mean, he was working in this, in the context of all of that, you know, he's making films about things that he was probably watching happen around him all the time. Yeah. That's one of the things I love about films of that era that are made about making films. I mean, like Singing in the Rain is probably my favorite example, but like...
Well, that's what I said. This is like Singing in the Rain's evil cousin, because it's the transition from the silent films to the talkies, but like the negative side of that rather than the glossy Singing in the Rain
style. Good morning,
of it,
good morning. Everybody smile and do everything in color, and it's amazing. And it's,
instead, you've got like in this one, William Holden being like a pathetic fella who's just like, he's like the original gold digger.
Okay.
He's a hack screenwriter who by chance ends up in parking in her garage, and then he ends up going out with her.
Right.
Because, she's like buying him loads of things to buy his affection and stuff.
Okay, right. But yeah.
And it starts out, she wants him to proofread her screenplay, which is terrible.
Okay.
But then he just keeps sort of stringing her along, and then she's buying him all this stuff.
So he can get the money out of her, basically.
And then eventually, obviously, he tries to leave and it doesn't exactly go well for him.
Right. Yeah. Doesn't exactly go well for him. Okay. No. I like this spoiler-free summary. I do really want to watch it. It's another one, and I think Sunset Boulevard, the story is like, it's like a play and like a stage show and all sorts.
It's
now,
been adapted
isn't it?
A few times. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I knew it better as that before I knew it was a film, and then I was like, oh yeah, I will need to check that.
That's
out.
Another one of these where it's, I feel like a lot of Wilder's films you could probably adapt to the stage because it's all mostly set in one location.
That's true, actually.
Like,
yeah.
The apartment is
totally,
the apartment.
Yeah. That would be a great play, actually. Yeah. I would love to see something like that on stage, yeah.
Yeah, and then obviously The 7-Year Itch would be sort of another one.
Yes.
That you could adapt to. I wouldn't want to see.
I don't think I'd pay like theater ticket prices to go see that unless it was like some sort of like more like a modern version where the dude actually gets his comeuppance in some sort of form, beaten to death with hammers at the end.
Any of the men in it get like the comeuppance. It's the sort of Billy Wilder pathetic man trope, except like he doesn't get any sort of
He doesn't get any blowback, and because he's the main character and you have to like listen to him talking to himself,
he
never shuts up. You're like positioned to like relate to this guy and like, you know, enjoy watching him, but you just don't. He's just insufferable.
It's like, all the women and children go away during the summer in New York so we can all cheat, am I right? It's like, no, what are you talking about?
Insane? Yeah. That's it, isn't it? It's the whole, like, it just doesn't, it, like, fundamentally, like, from a moral standpoint, it just doesn't work. Because it's like, not even the character, but just like the basic gist of the film is just, can this man resist the temptation to cheat on his wife? It's like, what?
Literally, it's like, it's not necessarily a bad thing having an unlikable protagonist.
Yeah.
But like,
You're supposed to like him, though. I think the problem is it's fine to have an unlikable protagonist if, like, you were reminded that he was a dickhead and you didn't like him, but the film almost, it, like, positions you to, like, laugh at him, but, like, laugh along with him and be like, ooh, I couldn't do that if I were him, that poor guy. It's like, but no, that's nobody's going to think that in this day and age. People probably did at the time.
Then this responsible bloke turns up at the end, he just sparks him out just for wanting his son's paddle.
That's true, yeah. I forgot about that, God.
There's literally, I think, one scene in it that I actually liked, and it was the one where they go and watch Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yeah, I was going to say, I almost put that on my story the other day because it was Marilyn's birthday day, and everybody was reposting bits, but I love that whole bit where she's like, oh, you know, the creature was like, maybe, you know, he was just a sympathetic character and everything. I was like, ah, where have I heard this before? Oh, yeah. But, like, and even the fact they've got, like, the old cinema display it's, like, so cool. That was immortalized on film. But yeah, there you go. That's the cynical position is 7-Year Itch is good if you want to see The Creature from the Black Lagoon.
But for not much else.
Not good for much else. You could just watch The Creature from the Black Lagoon, but... And the thing that bothers me about this one as well is they like blew the budget on this. It's like a full widescreen, like CinemaScope, full color.
Yeah.
Like it's quite a glossy, amazing production, but it's just really hard to watch because it's like, I don't like him. I do like Marilyn, yeah, obviously, because like she's not really doing anything wrong. She's like, you know, playing to type, as awful as that is, but that just kind of was the character she played. And, you know, I, it's worth watching for her, I think, if nothing else. It's just, I wish that it was more about her and less about this guy, because like, I just don't care about him. And like,
I will say I liked the way some of the scenes were directed. I liked the way that they would portray a sort of imagination.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I do like that. That was good. I think it was just like one of those things where it was like, God, this would be like so clever if it was funny or relatable. Like that, like it comes across really clever. And I was like, I love the way they've done that. It's just like, you're just stuck with this guy. That's the problem. And it's a good, you know, it's a good performance as well. Like, he plays him fairly well. It's just that, like,
clearly, because we're just sat here hating on him.
I can't think of anything else he's been in. I can't even, what was the actor called?
William Holden.
William Holden, okay. Oh, so is it the same guy from Sunset Boulevard?
I think so, actually.
Did you just say, because, yeah, you were saying about him.
I might be thinking of Sunset Boulevard, hang on. Little detour, let us find it. Let us go right down my ranking for
the year. We've got to fact check ourselves.
It's Tom Ewell.
Okay.
He's only been in 35 films, so yeah, probably not.
Probably not recognize him from anything else. Yeah. Okay. But yeah.
They credit Marilyn Monroe, and this is just the girl.
Seriously?
Yeah, she never gets named in it, the whole thing. She's just the girl.
Jesus.
That epitomizes my problem with it. It's like, it literally is just, she is an object to be looked at.
Pretty much, sort
of object of his desire. The closest you get to naming her is at the end where he's having that tiff with the fella. He's saying, oh, it could be Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah, I do love that though, because that's like, that feels like one of those things where like, I was like expecting them all like turn and look at the camera because it was like so like...
Well, when he said that, I was expecting like the entire time for him to have been imagining it, because it's, you had all this imagine, like he's been imagining everything going on, and he's like, oh, it could be Marilyn Monroe. I was like, hang on, but it is Marilyn Monroe.
It is Marilyn Monroe.
So like,
Monroe,
are you just imagining yourself having an affair? I guess you could read it like that. Then
you could read it like the whole thing is just also in his imagination.
Yeah, him like being a schizo in his house on his own.
Yeah, in real life, the family came back from the summer holiday and they found him lying dead under a plant pot. Like, he was like having some, it was like him, it's like Jacob's Ladder, where it's like the last moments and is everything.
The last
like,
moments having an affair.
Having an affair with Marilyn Monroe, and then he dies, and then it's like, then you realize what's going on. See, that would have been better.
Yeah,
can we
been...
have that ending,
exactly,
please? Can we like
someone remake it?
Somebody remake it, and we've got a much better ending there. But yeah, it does bug me that it's like, I think like you say, the cast Marilyn as this, you know, object to be looked at, and it's like, right, let's throw all the money we can, let's make it color, let's make it widescreen, let's make sure you could see it all on the big screen. It's like, yeah, that's pretty harsh, but
the sort of outlier, Double Indemnity.
Yes, Double Indemnity. Although that is, this is like jumping back quite a bit, I think, isn't it? Because it's 1943, something like that.
It was one of the earlier ones, but it was the first Billy Wilder film that I saw because it was on the course.
It was on the course, yeah. Also, great title cards. All of these films have great title cards. I think that's one thing that I really love about old, like, you know, these old Hollywood studio films. They always have these really cool title cards. Double Indemnity, that image is just burned into my head of him on the crutches.
It's a lost art, really.
It is, isn't it? I know, I miss that, because you very rarely even get the title on screen nowadays in a film. But
when it is, it's just sort of integrated into the shot.
But
like, I was watching Obsession, and it's sort of like, it's one of these ones where it's integrated into the shot. Or I think the other one that comes to mind is I know The Last Evil Dead. It's sort of, they integrate that into the shot,
yeah,
and
which,
so on.
Like, to be fair, that was pretty cool though, when she comes out the water, and I did like that. But yeah, I like the sort of old school credits at the start, big title card, some sort of flashy visual, and then you get them going through
the mummy one.
The mummy one
that's
is
so cool.
Always like the one I usually mention. That's like one of my favorites. It's a Wonderful Life. Yeah. I love the way they're going through the like wrapping paper and stuff. And it's a lost art, totally. And it's even better when they would build like these little physical sets. Like, the mummy's the perfect example, because I'd love to know what happened to that. Where did they put that little tiny pyramid?
Probably just chucked it out.
That's so cute. I can't believe it. That's so sad. But
yeah.
Yeah, like, Double Indemnity anyway.
Sorry. Yeah, it's It's the one I remember the least about since it was a while ago, but I do remember really enjoying it.
I loved it, and I think it's the quintessential noir, isn't it? It's just, it's got all the cliches, it's like all the tropes, but like, this is another one where I thought, oh, I know so much about noir films, but you know, if it's not got Roger Rabbit in, why even bother really? But then I watched this one and I was like, that was really good. Yeah. Like, I really liked it.
The way that it's all lit and like, it's one of the best uses of shadows in like the
100%. Yeah,
so good.
I love the way it's the like non-linear storytelling of it as well, where it starts at the end and then you're getting the unreliable narrator. So here we go. This is a good example, as opposed to the 7 year itch. We've got an unlikable character, but that's not like the sticking point. Like, yeah. Obviously Walter Neff is like, you know, he's a bit of a moron and you don't really like, and you don't support what he's doing. You can see why he's doing it kind of, but it's still stupid. But like, yeah, you get what I mean? Yeah. Like you follow him through and you're still quite engaged to see, you know, what happened to this guy? How did, you know, a fairly respectable, is he an insurance salesman?
I think so. Yeah, he was like some sort of traveling salesman.
Yeah, so you're like, oh, well, how's this, you know, pretty respected insurance salesman fallen so far? And, you know, and he's got his, I love the boss in this as well, who's like sniffing around and he's like trying to figure it all out. And like, eventually he basically admits, he doesn't really admit to the police or anything. He just admits to his boss. He's like, yeah, man, Keys, you were right. I'm sorry. He's like, you got me all figured out.
It's another Billy Wilder combination of pathetic man and like femme fatale progressive woman.
Yeah, well, she's great in it. That I cannot remember the actress's
name.
Barbara Stanwyck. There you go. Yeah, she's really, really good in this. And this is another one where it's like, one of the original femme fatales, and I think it's helped by the fact that Walter Neff does come across as a bit of a sort of pathetic man. He's not really like, he doesn't really.
It emboldens her a lot more.
It does, yeah, I think. But she's really strong in it, and I think she's probably one of the like the best parts of the whole thing.
It's one of those ones where we were screening it and like people came out and was like, oh, whatever. I didn't really think much. Like, what? That was great.
I really liked it. It was like proper classic, you know? Like, it felt like a genuinely well-made, you know, it's just when you watch an old Hollywood film, you're like, oh, I can see why everybody holds that in such high regard.
It was the same with My Darling Clementine.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was like a sort of classic, really well-made, just great time. Then people came out and was like, oh, whatever. It was whatever.
What? Yeah, I love that. I love that as well. I think maybe with that one, maybe people have been spoiled by Tombstone. But
yeah, that's
like,
true.
But even then, I still thought it was great. Mm. And I don't know. I'd like to watch the two of them back to back to see like which one I prefer. Because I think I could go either way for me at the minute. But I think it was. It was a good screening. And I'm glad that was the first time I saw it. Mm. And it took me a while to even really put it together that it was the same Billy Wilder who did all those Marilyn films, you know? So like,
but I didn't realize either. It was only till you sort of suggested doing this episode and I was like going through watching a few of them. I was like, oh yeah, I have seen one of his films before.
Yeah. Well, that was the same. I was like, well, I have seen that one. And then that was why it was really funny when I was watching The Apartment and I realized that The Boss was the same guy from Double Indemnity. I was like, I recognize him from somewhere.
I didn't even clock it. I was too busy in like interested in the fact that someone else in the office was Poop Deck Pappy from Popeye.
Christ almighty. Try and out niche me. I recognize the guy from Popeye, the Robert Altman film. Although to be fair, I did see that and I almost messaged and said, Billy, you gotta watch this film for no other reason other than because somebody from Popeye's in it. So yeah, I mean, it's just they're great, aren't they? They're so good. All of these films are so good, and like they just speak for themselves. I don't really think you don't really need any context or anything. You can just go in, and they're just great times, you know. So
well, I've recommended like some Like It Hot to people when they just want something casual to put on because it's just such an easy watch.
It is.
All of them are really. It's depending on your mood, I suppose. For like the Sunset Boulevard or Double Indemnity.
I
think they're still quite accessible.
Yeah, I think they're all very accessible. I think it's just because they take different approaches to the themes and tone, which is interesting because it feels like you're watching, he's a very comfortable director because you kind of know what you get, but like you don't feel like you're watching the same film over and over. It's like a similar approach to a concept, but each one is,
well, that's, you know, why I'd love to see Witness for the Prosecution, if I can find it anywhere.
Yeah, there's quite a few others that I would like to watch still. So.
That's like a Billy Wilder sort of court drama in the style of, I don't know, Sidney Lumet's 12 Angry Men. That would be amazing. Yeah,
that would be really good.
It's got an average of 4.4 on Letterboxd. It's like, oh my God, I need to find this.
Very, very good. Yeah, I do need to watch that.
One called Ace in the Hole as well, which
all right,
I haven't really heard much about, but it's really highly rated. It's got Kirk Douglas in it.
That's, yeah.
It's meant to be really good, but another one where I just have not been able to find it anywhere.
Is there like a DVD box set of this?
There's got to be. I've got Sunset Boulevard under my, like, I found a DVD of that. It's the sort of thing that I think if you went like a house clearance or something, you would find it.
I think the thing with, although to be fair, the thing with the challenge with some of these is I think a lot of people consider the more famous ones as more Marilyn Monroe films than Billy Wilder films. So I was coming at them from a like director point of view, and I was like, well, I'll watch this one because I like Billy Wilder stuff, but also it's got Marilyn in.
Yeah.
But then that it leads you to all kinds of places, because then that was why I watched There's No Business Like Show Business, which is not a Billy Wilder film, but it's Marilyn and Donald O'Connor. So it's a sort of crossover of like Some Like It Hot meets Singing in the Rain. It's just like one of those big, grand, like I say, all the money in the world they've thrown at it for CinemaScope, color. And it's like a huge sort of ensemble cast, and it's so, like, you know.
It's kind of like Sabrina as well. That was another Billy Wilder film, but you don't really think of it as a Billy Wilder film. It's
I don't think I would have,
A vessel for Audrey Hepburn and Humphrey Bogart.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's the thing. I mean, he worked with a lot of these different actors, but I think they ended up becoming more famous than him and his work, so they kind of took the credit a little bit. But
that's why, when you suggested this, I thought it was a good idea, because, like, I feel like he doesn't get his flowers for like how insanely good his films are. Like,
totally,
We came in today and they were like, oh, everyone in the studio was like, oh, what are we recording today? I was like, oh, we're doing Billy Wilder. I was like, who's that?
That's what I mean, I think you would know the films, you just wouldn't know that there was one guy, one director connecting them all together, so.
He wrote a lot of them as well, so they're all like sort of his like brainchilds.
That's it, isn't it? I think when you're like a writer-director, you do deserve more credit, really, because you're basically crafting all of these characters and worlds. And even though Marilyn, Jack Lemmon, all these different actors have taken them and made them their own and kind of became, you know, like epitomized the films with these performances, they didn't invent them, you know, this guy wrote them. So, you know, I think he does deserve the credit. I think he misses out on quite a lot of it. And, he's just one of those, classic Hollywood directors that should be, you know, held in very high regard.
So if you listen to this and take away anything from what we've said, it's go and watch some more Billy Wilder films, because Absolutely. He deserves a lot more credit.
Yeah, totally. Can't argue with that. I think that's all the runaway musicians we've got time for today. Make sure to check out our Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook pages for more Cine Club podcast content and updates.
As always, this episode was recorded and produced by us, the Sunderland University students, as well as being engineered and edited by Emily Main. A special thanks goes out to Steve Cannon, Barbara Sadler, and Richard Berry. A reminder that our two stars ready for their close-up this week have consisted of me, Billy,
and me, Jake. This has been a Cine Club production for Spark. Thanks for listening.